Welcome to the very first episode of Back in Style. If you don't know what this is the Twisted Mug Media Network's Twin Peaks podcast. It's a podcast, it's all about Twin Peaks, as you probably gathered. I'm Logan Emmert. I'm one of the hosts of the Cinema Talk podcast. I appear on Stop, Wait, What? And...
Yeah, I'm Matthew. You can also find me on the Cinema Talk podcast. Our Star Wars podcast, you know, a bunch of other things going on there. Super pumped for this. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes, this is kind of part of an expansion that our media company is doing, and we're really excited about it. So we're getting this out. We're getting the Star Wars podcast out, like Matt just said. There are going to be a couple others that are maybe to follow. More on that. Keep paying attention to Cinema Talk and... all the scheduling updates and things like that, but yeah, we're really excited about this. So today is pretty much just going to be about the pilot of Twin Peaks. So for those of you who don't know, if you've listened to Cinema Talk, you have probably figured out that I am a huge Twin Peaks fan. It's my favorite TV show. I talk about it any chance I can get. And Matt, what is your experience with Twin Peaks?
Yeah, so I'm kind of on the other side of that. I had never seen Twin Peaks up until now, and, you know, I'd always heard Logan telling me things about it, and of course I'd heard about David Lynch, and this is, you know, very, huge legacy, and how, you know, this is such a good show, and, you know, I'd always put the show on the back burner. It was on my Netflix list for, like, months, until finally now I actually have an excuse to watch it. So, yeah, Logan is the seasoned Lynchian, I'm the new fan, so, you know, wherever you are, with your knowledge of Twin Peaks... I invite you on this journey. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. So this is a spoiler-free podcast. I mean, since Matt hasn't seen the show, we won't really be talking about anything to come. I might have to allude to things that are coming in the future, but there will be no spoilers. So if you're, you know, if you've never seen the show, maybe start watching it. You know, the first two seasons are on Netflix. If you don't know, the first two seasons of the show happened in 1990 and 1991. Then they had a movie, Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, in 1992. And then they had the new season in... that was 2017. I almost said 2018. That was 2017. And so we're going to be talking about all that and more.
Definitely.
So that's exciting. So I guess in true Cinema Talk fashion, for our friend Ryan Floyd, let's get into the plot summary.
We'll see how Logan holds up here with the grammatical errors.
We'll see, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I've never done this before, so it might really be that difficult, and we've been giving him crap for it all this time.
I don't know. But... Floyd even messed up on the 15-second Clone Wars episode plot summary.
Did he really?
He did.
Amazing.
So, all right, give it a go.
Slip-ups find a way. Okay, so this is going to be a really long plot summary, and I tried to say a little bit about every character, just so you can keep it all straight, because there are a lot of characters. But all right, here we go. In the town of Twin Peaks, Washington, fisherman Pete Martell says goodbye to his wife, Catherine Martell, as he leaves to go fishing. But he stops short when he sees that a body is wrapped in plastic on the shore. A call to the sheriff's station brings Sheriff Harry S. Truman, Deputy Andy Brennan, and Dr. Will Hayward to the scene. The body is revealed to be that of homecoming queen Laura Palmer, whose mother, Sarah Palmer, is looking for her at home. Sarah calls Major Garland Briggs and his wife, Beth, parents of Laura's boyfriend, Bobby Briggs. Sarah begins panicking and calls the Great Northern Hotel, where her husband Leland is working, and where she suspects that Laura might be as well. Leland and the owner of the hotel, Ben Horn, are giving a business proposal for the Ghostwood Estates project to the Norwegians. As Sarah and Leland are on the phone, Sheriff Truman arrives to tell Leland the news. Meanwhile, at the Double R Diner, Bobby offers to take waitress Shelley Johnson home from work, revealing their love affair. Bobby worries that Shelley's boss, Norma Jennings, knows about their affair. Bobby brings the car to a screeching halt as they realize that Leo Johnson, Shelley's abusive trucker husband, is home earlier than expected. At Twin Peaks High School, Bobby is called into the office for an interrogation with Sheriff Truman, Deputy Brennan, and Deputy Hawk, who suspect Bobby of Laura's murder. Laura's friends, Donna Hayward and James Hurley, see that she is missing from her usual seat and become worried. An announcement from the principal confirms their fear that Laura is dead. Josie Packard, owner of the Packard Sawmill, is feuding with Catherine Martell, over what to do about the mill in light of Laura's death. Josie decides to shut the mill down when they hear that the daughter of one of their workers has also gone missing. The daughter, Ronette Pulaski, is later found in a confused state wandering on some train tracks. She becomes comatose. James visits his uncle, Big Ed Hurley, at Big Ed's gas farm and laments that Laura was the one. It is now apparent that he loved her, too. Special Agent Dale Cooper from the FBI. Just so you know, this is about a half hour into this hour and a half long episode, so we're a third of the way through. We got to power through. Special Agent Dale Cooper from the FBI enters the town of Twin Peaks. He meets with Sheriff Truman at the hospital and examines Ronette's and Laura's bodies to see what clues he can find. Under Laura's fingernail, he finds a small piece of paper with the letter R printed on it and reveals that the case has irrefutable similarities to another he worked on. Audrey Horn. Had I mentioned Audrey Horn before this? Yeah. Anyway, Audrey Horn, daughter of Ben Horn, causes a scene at the Great Northern, causing the Norwegians to leave and not sign off on the Ghostwood deal. Audrey's brother, Johnny Horn, who is mentally incapacitated in some way, it's not really clear quite how, he had been working with Laura and can't understand that she won't be coming to work with him anymore. Donna goes to visit Big Ed at the gas station, where her boyfriend Mike Nelson, Bobby's friend, yells at her for not being with him. We learn that Bobby is at the sheriff's station, where Cooper and Truman are reading through Laura's secret diary. They find the phrase, "nervous about meeting Jay tonight," along with a key which Cooper suspects will test positive for traces of cocaine. Throughout Bobby's interrogation, Cooper becomes convinced that he did not kill Laura, but it comes out that Laura had been seeing someone else. Cooper then interrogates Donna, who denies that she was seeing anyone else. When Cooper and Truman go to the crime scene, they find half of a gold heart necklace. They proclaim that they need to find who has the other half, and it's revealed to be James. They check the lockbox that the key opens and find a pornographic magazine with a picture of Ronette, along with a picture of Leo Johnson's truck. At the Johnson house, Leo is becoming suspicious of Shelley's infidelity when he finds another brand of cigarette in the house. Norma calls Ed, revealing that they too are in love, but not doing anything about it, due in part to Ed's drape-obsessed wife, Nadine. At a town hall meeting, Cooper warns the town that they may be dealing with a serial killer, and suggests a temporary curfew. Donna overhears her father telling her mother that they found half of a heart necklace at the crime scene, so she meets with James to hide his half. She goes to the roadhouse, where a fight breaks out between Mike and Bobby and Ed. Donna goes with another biker to go meet James, and Cooper and Truman try to follow them but lose them. James and Donna meet in the woods, and while they're burying the necklace, James tells Donna about the night before and how it was like a nightmare. They confess their love for each other. James is brought to the sheriff's station, where he has no alibi, and Mike and Bobby, who are also in jail, taunt him. Truman promises Cooper a good rate at the Great Northern, where he believes he'll be staying for quite some time. Truman then goes to visit Josie, revealing yet another love affair. They recognize that the murder of Laura Palmer probably happened about the same time as the night before. Sarah Palmer has a vision in her house of a hand digging out the necklace from the woods, and she screams as the credits roll. And that is the pilot episode of Twin Peaks. It's highly regarded as one of the best pilots of all time.
I must say that was a very good plot summary. I don't think you messed up once. Nicely done. That was actually very nice for me. The second time I watched it before the podcast, I took thorough notes on trying to keep track of, as you heard, all the plot lines and all the affairs. So this was nice to, you know, to get everything back in order.
Oh yeah, I mean there are so many characters. It's really, really hard to keep them all straight. Definitely a good thing that you watched it twice.
Especially with a pilot when they're establishing everything. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And they're all kind of happening at once. Mm-hmm. And I mean it's a lot to handle, but you know, each of these plots kind of has something. There are obviously those that are more interesting than others.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, for the most part, these are all, you know, pretty intriguing plots.
Yeah, and they're all filled with extremely unique characters and unique setups, which I think is what it makes them easy to differentiate.
Oh yeah. So I guess right off the bat, I know we had talked a little bit yesterday about the intro and the music.
So the first time I put this on, I just threw it on, and that music just hit me. And immediately I was like, all right, you know, like, I'm in this. I know this is going to be good. And I have not stopped listening to the music since. That is now my go-to study music. Whenever I got to, you know, just crank out some homework, I put it on. I absolutely love it. I think it completely sets the mood for the show, along with the beautiful images. It's just, it's such an atmospheric intro. I think it's absolutely beautiful. I have something with, like, forest and, like, fog where I just think it's beautiful. So, I thought it was lovely, yeah.
Yeah, all this imagery of the forest and they have the trees, but then also they have this the sawmill. And they focus a lot on the machinery in this intro. And how, you know, they have some real close-ups of you know, the saws that are cutting the trees. And I think that really says something about what Lynch is going for here. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, that it's not that the theme of the show is, you know, industrialization is bad and we shouldn't have factories that are making things out of wood. But it certainly just, it contributes to the like you said, the atmosphere. And that's mm-hmm. that's what a lot of the show is. You know, there are things where you can't really take that as, like, you can't take a lot of things in the show as, like, a clue of, like, ooh, maybe that's a clue of who murdered Laura Palmer. But if you read it the right way, it'll kind of point you in the direction of kind of how to think.
Sure.
To figure it out, I think. Mm-hmm. So that's something about it. Yeah, next thing I have in my notes, this opening shot of, there's a small little statue of two black dogs. And it pans over to Josie Packard in the mirror. She's putting on her makeup and she's humming. And it's just this weird atmosphere where, you know, you know something is off already.
Yeah, the first time I saw this, you know, once I got, like, you know, halfway through the episode and I reached the end of it, I kind of forgot how it started, you know, just because Josie doesn't take up too much of the screen time in the episode. So the second time I saw it, I was like, oh, that's interesting. I forgot that she started off this episode. And I was like, all right, you know, that means something. All right, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah, she kind of starts out the whole thing, which is, yeah. It's kind of an odd place to be with that.
Yeah, and then as the fisherman begins to walk out towards the log, Josie actually, she casts a suspicious glance. We can't see that she's looking at him directly, but it, you know, seems to suggest, you know, there was something suspicious was going on. Obviously, this is all speculation on my part, but it was like, you know, does she know what he's about to find? You know, something eerie going on there.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
There, I think we'll find a lot in this episode. There's kind of a sense that, you know, even before people find out, you know, that Laura Palmer has been killed, there's kind of a sense that people already know. In a way, which I think is really interesting. One of the things that kind of suggests that Pete Martell. I'm gonna say full names as much as I can in this episode, just to keep it from being as confusing.
Yes.
Yeah, as it could be. But yeah, so Pete, he sees this body, and you know, he calls the sheriff station. He's really distraught, and he goes, "She's dead, wrapped in plastic," and I think the audience, at least the first time I saw it, what I was thinking was, who? Like, who's dead? But Sheriff Truman, he doesn't ask that. Instead, he asks where. And it's really interesting that I think maybe he already knew, or, you know, maybe she had been missing, and he kind of, you know, he kind of suspected that it would be her. But, you know, then when Doc Hayward comes to, you know, examine her later, he seems really surprised by it. So I don't know what you think about that.
That's true. I never thought as the as Truman as, you know, being suspicious with in regard to this murder. But you're right. When he's on the phone with Pete, the camera just stays on Truman, and Pete says his thing, and he kind of takes a pause, and you assume he's going to ask who, but he takes a pause and he asks where. That's very true. I didn't think of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then we get this funny little short scene with Lucy. Lucy Moran is their receptionist at the sheriff's station. I left her out of the plot summary.
Oh, that's right.
Kind of because she's just kind of there for comic relief. This is a weird little scene. I think I didn't really get the tone of what this was going for. I think the first time I watched it, there's this comedy with, you know, she's over-describing which telephone she means for Truman to pick up. She's, you know, the black phone, not the brown phone, the one on the table over there that we got last week from, you know, wherever. And Truman, you know, it seems like he knows. He's just kind of letting her go along with it.
Yeah, throughout this whole episode, he kind of just, he just deals with her a bit. It's obvious that she's been doing this, and he's dealt with her for a very long time. But yeah, it kind of comes out of nowhere. But there's like instances of this throughout the episode of these moments of kind of off ball and out of place humor. It's like, all right, okay.
Yeah. I mean, scenes that are very funny, but that you kind of feel bad laughing at because, you know, you just realize that this girl is dead.
Yeah, totally a little bit out of place. But yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I think it definitely contributes to the tone a little bit, but it's at the same time it's out of place. And then also we get some comedy with Deputy Andy Brennan, who starts crying when he sees this body, and it's, you know, this is heartbreaking and also funny at the same time. I'm not really sure how they were able to kind of strike that balance.
Yeah, you know, because they say that. They implied that this has been going on for a while, that he can't, you know,
same thing as last year in Mr. Blodgett's barn.
He can't keep his emotions under control. It is really funny because he is literally a crime scene photographer. His job is to take photos of dead people.
Right, and he can't do it without crying. Although I heard this observation somewhere that you rarely see a policeman crying. And this is something that, I mean, it probably happens all the time where, you know, they're always witnessing these horrific things that happen and that they have to investigate and stuff like that, that they have to photograph, like Andy does. But, you know, they never get to cry on the job. And so I think this is just an instance of, you know, kind of like that's allowed to happen in Twin Peaks. And it's a very real thing. I think it's a very real touch in this episode.
Yeah, emotionally, he definitely plays the opposite of Truman, who is very reserved and hard, doesn't show any emotions throughout most of the episode. Yeah,
he's a big Boy Scout, I think. Yeah, not Truman. He's pretty stoic, but you know he seems like a real upstanding gentleman.
Yes.
Something
I wanted to point out is. Mm-hmm. When they roll over the body and they pull back the plastic to reveal that it is Laura Palmer, something that struck me about the appearance of her face was, even though she was dead and her face was discolored, how, you know, beautiful she looked and kind of elegant, because she has sand in her hair, but it almost resembled glitter. And you know, the way that her face, you could tell, was like blue from being in the water and being dead for a while, but it just looked like makeup, and something about it looked very elegant and beautiful.
I think that's really interesting that you mentioned that. I think, you know, a lot of people say with David Lynch that he is kind of, he kind of finds like beauty in death, kind of. Although he's not like a necrophile or anything, but there's this interesting quality about like kind of sex and beauty, and then also with like death and tragedy. Mm-hmm. I've been reading his half autobiography, half like memoir, half biography. it's called Room to Dream. Strongly recommend it, but. He tells about, like, a childhood memory where, in his neighborhood, he was, like, walking, I believe, with his brother, and they saw this woman with blood on her mouth, completely pale and naked, and just describing this imagery about how, you know, he realized the trauma that had happened, but, you know, she was beautiful, and this, you know, this sympathy and that he felt, I think that's something that he kind of tries to capture with this imagery. So yeah, I really like that you pointed that out there. Mm-hmm. And then this Laura Palmer's theme is just beautiful and haunting and soaring. And I mean, Angelo Badalamenti's score just sets the mood perfectly, I think.
It's such a great song because it starts off, you know, very, very eerie, very gloomy. But then it, like, picks up in the middle of the song and becomes hopeful. But then also just very sad. It's used in a lot of the scenes. Or in some of the scenes where the Laura Palmer's mother is crying, it's used very effectively. I love it.
Yeah, definitely. And some behind the scenes Twin Peaks with this is David Lynch and Angelo Badalamenti, who composed the score for this. They met and they were going to talk about the music, Angelo had a piano there, and David Lynch basically just told him, like, I want you to play something that's, like, brooding. Like, imagine like, a dark figure in the woods. And he starts playing this intro for it. And David goes, you know, now play me something that's, you know, like, lead that into, you know, this figure is walking out of the woods into the sunlight, and it's this beautiful figure, and Angelo is playing this whole part that has now become Laura Palmer's theme. And then Lynch describes, you know, going back into the woods and back down to this, you know, dark undertone. And after all this was over, Angelo said, you know, that was really great. That was really helpful. I'll take that home and work on that. And David Lynch said, no, do not touch that. That's perfect the way it is. So what he played that first time when David Lynch was just describing that stuff, that's exactly what we get there, which I love.
Wow, that's really cool. That's really cool.
So then we're in the Great Northern. This scene gets me every time. So Leland is on the phone with Sarah. Sarah Palmer, Laura's mother, has been looking all over for her, is so frantic, calls Leland in like this frenzied panic state. Leland is trying to keep her calm, and then sees Sheriff Truman walk in the Great Northern and immediately knows what happens.
My God, the acting in this scene by Leland, right? Laura Palmer's
Ray
dad.
Wise is the actor.
Okay.
He's fantastic.
He looks very familiar. I have to look up his filmography. But oh my gosh, the acting in this scene by him is so good. I love the way he keeps it, you know, reserved. And, you know, he's like, what are you talking about? You know, she's probably someplace else with his wife. But then, you know, as soon as the sheriff walks in, you can just see the look on his face drop. And he knows something bad has happened. And even his wife on the other end of the phone hears him whisper the name of the sheriff, and she knows as well. It's such a great moment.
Oh yeah, and you really get the sense that a lot of people know what happened, but they all don't want to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Leland as her father. His acting is just, it's flawlessly, you know, realistic and painful. It's really just painful to see this guy grieving so much.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So then we get into the diner. And there's this character, Heidi, who walks in, just a couple lines. He's just like kind of a random little character who doesn't really pop up again in any significant ways. But, you know, they have some lines about, you know, seconds on Knockwurst this morning. Thought you Germans were always on time.
Yeah.
Too busy jumpstarting the old man. And, you know, it's this fun little dialogue that and a bit of humor that's thrown in this what's otherwise a very depressing segment of the episode.
Yes.
Then we're... do you have anything else?
Yeah, so then we're introduced to Johnny in that scene as well.
Bobby.
Sorry, wait.
Johnny. Bobby. Johnny is... Okay, Johnny is Ben Horn's son and Audrey's brother. So Bobby is Bobby Briggs.
Okay, that's the guy...
Major Briggs' son, and he was Laura's boyfriend.
Okay. Okay, I must have gotten their names mixed
okay,
up.
Yeah, okay, yeah, it's really confusing. Okay. I'm impressed that you're doing this well already.
Okay, yeah, so Bobby, we're introduced to him, mm-hmm. and his appearance kind of threw me off at first, because his character is very interesting. He's very unhinged. He kind of plays, you know, this cool high school guy, jock, you know, he's got, you know, all the ladies under his wing. It's very funny, and he becomes more unhinged towards the end of this episode. He goes kind of crazy. It's very fun to watch. I don't think it ever delves into the area of unbelievability or just gets, you know, too crazy. I really liked his performance. It was really funny as well.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, we're also I love every scene in this episode where he's talking to Sheriff Truman or Agent Cooper a little bit later, and just the way that he acts, mm-hmm. and, you know, he like tries to put on a little bit of a front of like being respectful, you know, when the lawyer kind of nudges him in the interrogation room yeah. a little bit later, and
yeah.
and he's like, all right, I'm sorry, but, you know, then he just gets right back to yelling. And I love that about this character. It's exactly like you said, he's unhinged. And and also a really interesting little scene. We got our first love affair of the episode, of which yes. there are many.
Yeah.
His affair with Shelley Johnson. And yeah. there's so much cheating that goes on in this show.
It was very hard to keep track of. Even the second time around, there is so much going on.
Oh, yeah. There's Bobby and Shelley. There's,
There's the Uncle Ed and Norma.
Uncle Ed and Norma. And at the end of the episode, we get James and Donna. We have Truman and Josie.
That's right.
There's, I think, another this next episode is revealed.
Okay. I'm sure.
there are plenty more. Yes. But
I like in this scene with Shelley and Bobby as they're driving home, and they she tells them that Leo, her husband, he's gone. He's out in Butte. And the dialogue in this scene is kind of funny. I feel like it could be really cheesy in any other film or any other TV show, but it just kind of works with these two characters. You know, they talk. You know, I'm your pocket rock, and what stage are we in, and all this is kind of going back and forth, and they start drinking. But then the scene, comes to a halt when they see that Leo's truck is still there, and Johnny frantically just whips it out of there. Bobby whips it, turns around and gets out of there really fast.
I mean, we don't see Leo until much later, but we can tell just from this scene that, they're having all this fun, and as soon as they see that truck, boom, he's out of there. He does not want to mess with Leo, and you can tell that right away, I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're at the high school. Do you catch the guy dancing in the background
as he goes down the hall? That is my favorite thing in this whole episode. It's so this whole scene, and it's worth mentioning that once we see Shelley and Bobby in the car, this new music comes in. It's this really groovy kind of almost feels out of place with this bass, and it's feels very jazzy and almost noirish. It's so cool. And it creates this mood at the high school of suspicion, and it's kind of tense because you've got let me check my notes. Her name is Audrey Hoare. She's smoking the cigarette in the locker. And you just see this random guy just kind of like swivel and just dance across
the weirdest
hallway.
Dance.
It's really cool. It's a neat scene. Really feels like high schoolers in the TV show. It's strange.
Yeah, that's probably because they're all about 30 years old.
Yeah,
while this is being filmed. But then once they get into the classroom, they're taking roll call. Of course, this is a scene where they realize Laura Palmer isn't there. But before that, I wanted to point out someone made this observation. I can't take credit for this, but there are a lot of H names in this class, and they have. Donna Hayward, I have Audrey Horne, and then James Hurley. And I'm wondering if maybe that was, kind of something that they threw in this episode, and they were like, well, we'll make them all H because, we have to have them, consecutive during the roll call.
Yeah.
And then, then they have to, stick with it for two seasons and a movie and then another season.
It works, though. There's so many little quirks in this episode that are just so strange and seemingly out of place, but I don't know, it just kind of, it fits together well.
Yeah, they're out of place, but they're completely in place in this town of Twin Peaks at the same time. So then we get this incredibly dramatic tone shift with this girl runs across the courtyard. Donna looks out the window and sees her, and she's screaming, and we have no idea what she's screaming about.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it seems at the time she's screaming about Laura and, this whole community is bereaved. But how would she know about Laura? She's probably screaming about, boy problems or, someone hung out without her, on Saturday night. Or, it could be any one of these things that high school girls get stressed over. But it just adds to this tension, and it's not specifically about Laura, but at the same time it is.
That's interesting. Yeah. I just kind of connected that to the whole Laura Palmer, murder thing, but yeah, it's true. It could be anything. How would she know?
Yeah. Right.
No announcement has been made yet. They just told the teacher.
Yeah. And I mean, there's this slow realization, as when the policeman walks in, is telling the teacher, about how Laura's died. Donna and James are just kind of exchanging looks and realizing what's happened. And Donna just becomes completely inconsolable at this scene. Which I think is some really good acting from her.
Yeah, I like the characterization done in this scene, because you see Donna just, you know, start to break down and cry, and then James just breaks the pencil in half. You already tell he's got this leather jacket, he's kind of a tough guy, and I love the looks they're exchanging. They're such good actors. Yeah. It's such a joy to watch.
I mean, he's a tough guy, but, you know, he's also kind of tender.
And yeah, yeah.
To be honest, throughout most of the series, a lot of people have a lot of problems with James Hurley's acting. Yeah.
At least in this episode, I mean, some of his face and just the way he cast glances was a little different, but I really got into it. But.
Yeah, I mean, for some of the scenes, especially in this pilot, I think he does a great job. We'll get to talk about that a little later.
I think I know what scene you're talking about. But yeah,
so more of that to come. and then this principal makes the announcement, and... Man, this gets me every time when he just starts breaking down. He can't make it through the announcement. And, you know, you just see, I mean, it's so brutal what Lynch puts us through to understand, like, just the hole in this community that Laura has left.
Mm-hmm. And it's obvious this is a small town. I mean, things like, things of this nature don't happen too often. And it's even more shocking because it's Laura Palmer and, you know, We're led to believe that she's a very popular girl. She was the homecoming queen, you know, well-known, notable figure, gone from the community.
Yeah, definitely. And it's really interesting that you say about the small town and the, like, kind of small town vibe of this, because, you know, on the sign that says, you know, welcome to Twin Peaks in this intro, it says a population is something like, it's like 51,000 and... I've heard a lot of people say this does not feel like a town of 51,000. It feels way more like a town of 5,000. And apparently the original, you know, what David Lynch and Mark Frost, the other creator of this show, had planned on doing was making it 5,000. And the network kind of told them, you got to make it more relatable. No one lives in a town of 5,000. so they had to make it 50,000. But it's still, I think you're right, it still very much has this small town vibe. And then... So after that, after the thing with the principal, we get into the first Bobby Briggs interrogation scene.
Yes.
Where I think he's awesome. He realizes Laura's been killed. He kind of stops acting up, and then, you know, he's still this rebellious teenager.
Mm-hmm. He lashes out at the cops. He flips out when they, because he doesn't want to be accused of murdering her. They take him away. Yeah, really fun scene. You get that groovy score back again. This really reminded me very noirish. You know, the camera's just kind of circling the cops interrogating on the table. Very cool.
Yeah, I see what you mean. and then, of course, Josie shuts down the mill, which Catherine is not too happy about. We get a little bit more explanation about them later in the episode, where Truman kind of explains to Cooper, you know, this is kind of what happened. You know, Josie's husband died. Left everything to her, left nothing to his sister, Catherine. So Catherine is kind of in a perpetual state of trying to get back at Josie.
This was a cool scene, because even without that information, we just get hints of, you know, what's going on. There's kind of this power struggle between the two. It's very interesting to watch.
Yeah. And Josie has this funny little line, we're going to... we're going to push the plug with the mill, and, you know, it's pull the plug, and she always gets these little phrases wrong, and she makes an announcement, you know, in the lights of what has happened. And
I didn't even notice that, because it feels like such a serious scene with the music and everything. I wasn't even paying attention.
Yeah. So they have, like, bits of comedy thrown in here. It's interesting, tonally. But right about now is where we get Agent Cooper. For the first time. And I would say he's the main character of this show. But, I mean, like, almost irrefutably he is. But he shows up a half hour into this pilot. And I think that really speaks to what Lynch and Frost were trying to do. Because they really wanted you to get a sense of how the death has impacted the community.
Mm-hmm. That's true. They really set up the whole atmosphere and the mood first. Which is a good idea, so that then when Agent Cooper comes in, he feels like even more of an outsider. You know, you already feel like you're part of the town at this point. You're right along Truman, as he says, we're glad to have you here.
Right.
And he's, oh my gosh, he's so much fun. I didn't really know what to expect from his character. I wasn't expecting it to be so, you know, kind of off the wall and funny, but oh my gosh, such a fun addition. Really cool.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He's a fantastic character. And then another thing I want to mention, I heard someone make this comparison that no one in like modern TV shows this much grieving. And that's so true because, you know, you have these like weekly procedural dramas where, you know, someone gets killed every week and they have to, you know, they have to figure out who did it. And there's no time, you know, there's maybe like a scene with the wife where she's like kind of sad and, you know, trying to say like if he had any enemies. And that just doesn't do it justice, I feel like, for the real world. You know, I mean, I've certainly never experienced anything like this. I don't think you have either.
No.
And probably very few people have, but this just seems like such a realistic representation of, you know, what would happen if, you know, a member of this community, like Laura Palmer, was suddenly murdered. And I think this is a really unique pilot because it can do that, where so many modern shows that you have to squeeze into an hour, you know, they don't get to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's a fault of shows today, and also just kind of a product of, you know, the formulas that we have now, and, you know, it's like a plot per week and that kind of thing. But yeah, I love how much they show of this. But yeah, now we got Agent Cooper, and you know, we just said he's a really, really fun character, a really interesting character.
Mm-hmm. But he's also super down to business, and we get this this thing of him talking into a recording device.
Oh, I love this.
And he's addressing the person that he's talking to, he's recording
Diane.
It for, as Diane, which, you know, I have no idea who that is, but that was interesting. You know, wife, you know, dead wife, you know, it's implied that she is a detective or a cop of some sort, that they work together or something, because, you know, he says, once he finds the letter underneath the nail, he says, you know, give this to, you know, to so-and-so to figure it out. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's pretty interesting. Another, you know, another quirk to his character.
Yeah, and I only actually noticed it this time around, but when he says, you know, give this to Albert's team, not Sam. I don't know who Sam is, but we do actually meet Albert later in the series. He's a very fun character.
Oh, so okay, cool.
I only picked up on that this time. I'm not quite sure why, but yeah. So they're kind of planning ahead with all this. They're setting up a lot for this season.
Mm-hmm.
He has a fascination with the trees and with nature.
Yes.
Which I really like, and, you know, he's also super down to business. He's got these quick switches between, you know, he's super, you know, he's telling Sheriff Truman, you know, you gotta do exactly as I say. I don't want there to be any, you know, animosity between the local law enforcement and and the FBI. And then he goes, now what kind of trees you got growing here? And that's that's just great. You know, this character is he's fun, he's... I find him really interesting because he's somewhat relatable, and he kind of seems like, you know, who we're supposed to identify with in this show. But also, I mean, he's an outsider to the town. He's incredibly smart and a little hard to relate to at times, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a great decision to make him more, you know, lighthearted. If you go the typical route and just have a, you know, the usual hard-boiled, really tough detective come in, it definitely, you know, weigh the show down a bit with such a heavy murder case. But yeah, it's such a fun thing. And also,
I was just gonna say, I mean, at times he is kind of like a, you know, kind of a noir detective. Mm-hmm. and that side of him is very fun too, but, you know, also he's kind of a goofball at times.
Yeah.
So I love the scene. I'm not sure if you have anything before this, tell me if you do, but I had in my notes the scene where they're examining Laura's body, and Cooper finds the letter under the fingernail. The lights in the scene are flickering.
Mm-hmm.
And they say something about, you know, that's a bad transformer. so this is some behind-the-scenes Twin Peaks again. This is, like, commonly cited as, you know, oh, of course Lynch did this because it's Lynch, but while they were shooting the scene, the light just started flickering, and it was a complete accident. And everyone's like, oh God, we have to fix this light now. You know, this is going to be like a whole day of trying to get this fixed, and we're going to lose time. And Lynch was just like, yeah, don't fix it. It's perfect like this. It sets a creepy atmosphere, you know. Leave this light to flicker, and it totally sets this scene in the complete right direction, I think.
That's interesting. Yeah. I agree with you. It definitely does.
Yeah, he loves a lot of like these happy accidents.
The one thing I wanted to say before the flickering lights is, I believe they meet Russ Tamblyn before this, right?
Yes.
Which is cool for me because I know Russ Tamblyn from West Side Story's Riff, and I was like, oh, hey there, older Riff.
Did you happen to recognize any of the other characters from West Side Story?
There were more?
If you can, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Richard Boehmer, Tony, plays Ben Horn.
Ben Horn is the businessman trying to get the land. Oh, my.
Yeah.
That's
him.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, so you got Riff and Tony in this show, too.
Whoa, that is awesome.
Yeah. yeah, I love that. I only saw the movie West Side Story for the first time recently. Yeah, I mean, you probably know this if you have listened to like Cinema Talk, but we put on West Side Story in March of this past year.
Yeah, March.
So I was kind of doing my research for that, and I decided to watch it, and I was like, oh, there's Dr. Jacoby. Oh, and there's Ben Horn too. So that was kind of fun for me.
Neat.
And also, In at the morgue, we see this one-armed man.
That's right. This scene completely threw me off. I didn't really catch it the first time, but the second time. So we get the shot of him from the back, like from the view of Cooper and Truman. And then he like walks out. Then we just see a bit of his arm. Then we cut back to the Truman and Cooper. Really strange.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think that's the first kind of hint that you know, the David Lynch kind of like weirdness is starting to creep into this. There's already a little bit of like a creepy atmosphere, but I think this is maybe the first hint that something more is going on.
Yeah, it seems that like this episode is pretty tame compared to some of the other stuff that goes on, because, you know, I've just heard some of the episodes are like really bonkers and crazy stuff happens. So yeah, it's, you know, easing your way into it. It's interesting.
Yeah. I did leave Dr. Jacoby out of the plot summary, just because he is not really important in this episode. He has a cameo though, so that's fun, and he's a fun character. You know, we'll get to know him a little bit. He's a little bit crazy and that kind of thing. And then we have Audrey in a very interesting scene at the Great Northern.
Yes.
She pushes a pencil into a cup. A styrofoam cup filled with coffee, and then goes, I wonder what would happen if I pulled this out. And the secretary is sitting there with all her, you know, important business papers on the desk, and she goes, don't do it, come on, you're not gonna do it. And Audrey just pulls it right out, and, you know, of course she did it. I mean, she's crazy. And she then goes into the room where all the Norwegians are meeting, and they're discussing whether they want to go ahead with this super important project that the Ghostwood Estates is what Ben is pitching to them.
Yes. And yeah. So he's trying to acquire the sawmill land, is it? Okay.
Yeah, and he is pretty sure, he says in this episode, he has good information that the sawmill is going to go belly up. So they're going to be able to get it for really cheap.
Yeah, they haven't actually acquired the land yet, which was the thing. And yeah, they didn't want the Norwegians to know about the murder, which eventually they do find out about. But yeah, this scene is funny, and something worth pointing out is before, when we first see Audrey Horn, there's this emphasis placed on the shoes she's wearing. The camera just lingers on them for a bit, and then again at the school, we see her change shoes into the red ones.
Oh.
Right? Yeah, I believe I'm correct. So, I mean, I don't know what that means, but I was like, all right, you know, that's something interesting.
Me neither. Yeah, I've never noticed that. But I mean, I think with the emphasis of the camera being on those shoes so much, I think that makes sense that it would have some kind of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, she, you know, she just seems kind of manipulative. She seems like she wants attention. She wants to cause trouble and just kind of wants to have fun with it. That kind of thing.
Obviously spoiled, obviously, you know, very rich. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We also get introduced to her brother, Johnny. This is Johnny, not Bobby.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
He's the one who has this Indian headdress, and he's, I think they say later in a later episode, he's like, he's like 30 and he's in third grade or something like that. So he's, he has like some extreme disability. I don't know if they ever really say specifically what it is, but, Laura had been kind of tutoring him, and, you know, now that she's died, he doesn't really know how to handle that, so he is grieving, and he's having trouble accepting that she's gone, which is kind of heartbreaking. You know, there's like kind of some comedic elements in this. You know, he's like banging his head against the dollhouse. And...
Yeah. But I mean, it also, you know, establishes Laura as more, you know, even more as that, it makes her loss even more impactful. Cause you're like, well, you know, she was actually a nice girl. She was tutoring this, disabled kid. She was the homecoming queen. Just, you know, a lot of things to make it even more.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then a line that really struck me this time. So Bobby is at the sheriff's station, right? And he's, you know, he's in the second interrogation scene, which I love. I love the moment where Cooper types out on the... It must be, like, some little calculator or something. But it's not a calculator. He types out, like, he did not do it. Just passes it over to Truman. And, I mean, you just kind of get the sense that, you know, he's right. And, like, Cooper is just always right, and he's kind of established his dominance in all these situations and just his pure intellect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really cool scene. We also get the video footage of the picnic, which I thought, you know,
very interesting.
Very eerie too.
Yeah, the picnic, this bike that's in the background, and so we find out that James has had something to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love when Bobby is leaving the sheriff's station and he sees his dad, Major Briggs. And Major Briggs is very formal, you know. He goes, "Robert, I'll be at home later if you need a sympathetic ear." And Bobby just goes, "I don't need any damn sympathetic anything." And I definitely detected a sense of, you know, that he was lying, that he kind of does need a little bit of sympathy right now. But you know, he's trying to keep on this tough guy front. And I don't know if you thought that at all. Maybe that was just me this time. But
yeah, I didn't pick up on that. But yeah, that's something worth pointing out. That's cool.
Yeah. So we see the note at the train, the crime scene.
Yeah.
This note written in blood.
Mm, yes.
It says "Fire Walk with Me." The title of the movie.
Yeah. You know, I have no idea what that means. But you know, I was like, all right. You know, that must mean something since that is the title of the movie. Yeah. You know, we see Andy crying again at the crime scene.
Of course. Yeah.
A pretty eerie scene. You know, the torture and where the torture occurred in this creepy looking train. Yeah. Very eerie.
Yeah. And this is an image that I noticed bears a similarity to, Sarah Palmer's vision at the very end of the episode, kind of skipping ahead a little bit. But, you know, she has this vision. This gloved hand is digging out the locket that had been put under a rock. And here's in this train, this mound of dirt with the necklace on it. And, you know, with the note underneath. I don't know. I found that to be a very similar image. And I guess... It might be Cooper. I forget exactly who does it, but I think someone with a glove reaches down and, you know, to pick up the...
Yeah, I believe it is Cooper,
when they're kind of investigating that crime scene. So I think there's a good, like, kind of connection with that image.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, before we get too far into the series, I kind of want to mention there's a lot of scenes with... there's a lot of themes, rather, with opposition and duality and... you can see a lot of that here. For one, you know, the Twin Peaks, it's, you know, there are two of them. It's duality and all that. And then, I mean, you have the double R diner. You could see that as a reference to that maybe. Also I think Laura and Ronette, you know, one died, one survived and is in a coma. And, you know, you have these two scenes with the necklace, you know, the different halves of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's interesting how they're kind of juxtaposed and, you know, it has to be two halves.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then I guess you could also look at the actual characters of Ronette and Laura. Well, I mean, at least from what I know, Ronette, they see her photo in the pornographic magazine, mm-hmm. and you see, like, there's some shady side to her. And also there seems to be a shady side to Laura, but, you know, we get the sense that she's a very upstanding citizen in the community.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I want to get to one of my... Oh, wait, sorry. Before this, they're at the post office, then where they find that magazine that you said.
Yeah.
And there's this massive deer head on the table.
Yes.
And they go, oh, that fell down. Now, I don't know if this is true for sure or not, but I have a suspicion that this was another one of the, like, happy accidents, that they arrived to the set at the post office, which, actually, I don't know if they arrived to the set at all, because it definitely just looked like another room in the sheriff's station.
That's true, yeah.
But I have a feeling that they got there and they saw this huge deer head and it was sitting on the table and they were like, all right, we'll move it. David Lynch was probably like, yeah, don't worry about it. We'll leave it there. Add some lines in there.
It's absurd, and it comes out of nowhere. It's just, you know, a brief mention. Oh yeah, you know, it fell down.
Yeah,
and then it just sits like in the foreground of the shot the whole time. It's hilarious, and you know, we see the stand. It's obvious that the deer head could have just fallen off into the table. You know, it must have fallen, and someone just threw it on the table because they didn't feel like putting it back up.
Right. Yeah, that's a very funny scene. Well, now what I wanted to talk about is Eric DeRay's performance. He plays Leo. In this scene, I think he's fantastic. I love how menacing he is. He plays the perfect abusive husband, which take that as a compliment.
Yeah, he's got the whole trucker look down. He's got the flannel. He's got the mullet. It was very eerie.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, he's definitely. I think he turns into a really, really interesting character,
right,
kind of throughout this series. So we'll kind of be charting his journey through the series.
Yeah, because there's obviously some connection with him and Ronette, because we see his truck in the magazine.
Yeah,
so I don't know what's going on.
That,
yeah, I don't know what's going on there, but we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out some more.
Yeah.
I think maybe in the next episode there's some more hints about this, maybe his connection to this whole thing, but and now there's this whole town hall scene, and I feel like a lot of it is exposition. You know, it's just kind of Truman explaining to Cooper, like, all the things that's going on. He explained, you know, like we said before, the whole thing with Josie and Catherine. He explains about, he just kind of gossips about some other people.
Sure, yeah.
We
get introduced to the log lady.
The log lady, who is just kind of a throwaway line in this. Very funny. She's flickering the lights, telling everyone to sit down, and Cooper goes, oh, who's the lady with the log? Sheriff Truman just goes, oh, we call her the log lady. You know, I mean, what is this? It seems so out of place and at the same time in place.
Yeah, and we get another funny thing with the mayor of the town. Obviously, this old guy doesn't understand how to use a microphone, obviously, out of it, you know.
Neither do we sometimes with Cinema Talk.
Yes, very true. Some self-reflection there.
Yeah. I love the mayor. He doesn't get a whole lot of screen time, but he's very funny when he does.
Yeah.
There's this whole scene, and the town just seems shocked about what has happened. The one kind of continuity thing that I want to point out, it seems a little bit out of character for Josie Packard to be attending this meeting. You know, like, she seems like the powerful one. Like, she's in charge. She has all this money. She's running the mill. You know, and, like, running a mill in a logging town is, like, you know, running the water supply for the ocean. Like, it's like, that's a pretty big deal. And
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. It probably makes sense, but it seemed a little bit off that, like, she would be, like, attending this meeting with all the, you know, all the common folk, so to speak.
Sure, sure.
But then, you know, on the way to our next scene, we go to the roadhouse, which is also on the sign. It has, you know, there's this neon sign that says bang bang, and it has a gun. But for whatever reason, it's always called the Roadhouse. So I don't know what the deal is with, like, the double name or how that came about.
Interesting.
But yeah, so we're at the Roadhouse, and Julie Cruise is singing the theme song.
Yeah, a beautiful song. It's called the Nightingale, and it really reminded me. There's this band that I love by the name of Beach House. And it was like, oh, the song sounded, you know, just the style of it was almost identical to Beach House's music. And I was like, oh, it's cool. You know, just some great music throughout this whole show. Yeah, this was cool. It's, you know, we almost get like this, you know, we see like these biker guys. I mean, you know, there's some tension between them and the rest of these, you know, these two like gangs almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some more West Side Story stuff.
Yeah.
I also really like the scene with Harriet, who's Donna's sister. And she's writing poetry in the room. And she helps Donna sneak out. And then after that, once Dr. Hayward comes up to the room, Harriet completely sells Donna out. She's like, I'm going to tell it to you straight. She bolted right out that window.
She's a really funny character. It's hilarious. She's like, yep, she just points at the window.
You see that window right there? That's a very, very funny scene.
Yeah, and we get Crazy Mike and Johnny, and he's like, Bobby?
You'll get it.
Are you boys drinking and driving?
Bobby's doing most of the driving, and then Bobby is, of course, completely gone.
Bobby is on the top of the car, dancing. Hilarious.
So, I guess we can talk about this now. The scene with James and Donna in the woods.
Oh, we're jumping over there? Okay.
I think so, because, I mean, it pretty much leads right there. There's kind of like the car chase. They follow the motorcycle with James's friend with Donna on the back. They kind of follow it at a discreet distance. He drops Donna off in the woods, and there's a scene, and it's really odd because first of all, it's pretty creepy when James is describing this, the last night that happened, and she was on the back of the motorcycle. She was, like, screaming, and she runs off into the woods, and it's, I want to know what you think about that scene.
Yeah, I did really enjoy it. You're probably going to bring up some gripes with James's acting in this scene.
In a little bit. Yeah.
Which I can understand. Yeah, he's got that, I changed my mind.
That is a 100% George Lucas line right there.
That's true.
Where he kisses her, he goes, I'm sorry. And then, like, a couple seconds later, I changed my mind. I'm not sorry.
That is straight up Anakin and Padme.
It was brutal.
It was the memory that he was talking about. It was kind of haunting. I don't know. Just the way he said that they were on the back of the motorcycle and she screamed that she loved him with her hands around his neck. It was just kind of eerie. I was into the scene. I really liked the two actors. And yeah, so then we start seeing
even though James is starting to make out after with his with his dead friend's best friend.
Yeah, because earlier in the episode, he tells Uncle Ed, she was the one.
He goes, Laura was the one. He says that about like every female character.
Yeah, he's very remorseful, but then he hops right into it with Donna, which was interesting.
they hide the necklace. There's a shot of a traffic light, and it's also used earlier in the episode, but it's kind of like a transition shot that I really like. It's just really chilling because you can only see like the light, but I mean, what's around it.
Mm-hmm. And I like that line that Cooper has earlier where he says, why am I whittling? And he's because I'm in a town where a yellow light still means slow down and not speed up.
Yeah.
I believe it's the line. Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I love that line. I think that's a nice insight into the small town stuff that they were going for here.
Yeah.
But then this vision with Laura or with Sarah Palmer.
Yeah, very eerie. We see a flashlight, some like handheld camera, going across the ground. And then she screams as a gloved hand reaches down and picks up the necklace. It was a very chilling way to finish the episode.
And we don't really know if she's seeing that same thing that we're seeing. I mean,
we assume
she is, but would she scream at a hand picking up a necklace, right?
It's true. I mean, I guess the one way you could look at is, she wasn't having a vision. She was just distraught. I mean, her daughter died and, she was just very sad, but it's interesting. I mean, there must be some connection between the two. Yeah, it's neat.
Yeah.
And then, we get the scene with Sheriff Truman. He comes home and we realize, he's got something going with Josie.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was some more love interest revealed.
Some more intrigue. And Catherine knows about it. We see her looking out the window at them and on the phone with the man. And
yeah, so, I mean, I don't know where this will go, but I could see, Mr. Bigwig, he's trying to get the land and then he kind of failed at it with the Norwegians. So maybe he's going to use the sheriff with Josie to try to acquire the land because Catherine obviously doesn't like Josie. So yeah, we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, we can see how that plays out.
Yeah, we'll see. Definitely.
Well, I guess it's time for final thoughts and ratings. Just kidding. We're not doing ratings for, these individual episodes. But yeah, I mean, this is your first exposure to Twin Peaks. What do you think?
I really enjoyed it. As I said, from the very, you know, just first seconds, I was just completely into it. You know, like we said, I mean, I have not seen any farther than this episode, so I am, you know, I'm dying to watch some more. I can't wait to see where this goes. I'm glad there's, you know, there's so many episodes and a couple seasons for me to watch. I'm completely intrigued. They drop so many hints, and, you know, we get that, the Lynchian absurdity. There's this weird stuff thrown in. It all makes it so intriguing, and I can't wait to see what happens next.
Definitely, definitely. Well, we'll see what happens next week, I think. Maybe 2 weeks, depending on how this Twisted Mug schedule all plays out. This will be released on a Friday.
Yes.
And probably next week will be a Stop, Wait, What, which is our comedy podcast. But we both have pretty busy months of October and November. We're both seniors in high school, so we got these, you know, these college applications going on. We're both going to be in our fall play, so it's going to be a busy couple months. So we might try to load up on episodes and then just have some to release whenever we can. So yeah, I mean that's kind of our plan. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you did, definitely check out our other shows on the network.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a bit of a shorter podcast, you know, only an hour. Yeah, a lot of fun to do. It's going to be fun. We're just going to be charting the journey through the Twin Peaks storyline. So super pumped for that. Join us in 2 weeks for that.
It's going to be great. Yeah. I mean, there's so much to talk about with every episode.
I can't imagine, you know, how deep in we'll be with, you know, just talking about everything. It'll be fun to look back at these early episodes, you know, see how innocent I was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think some of the theories you're starting to have are kind of in the right direction. Some are not. But, yeah, we'll see where it all goes. Right, that's part of the fun of this. So if you're listening for the first time, if you've been a longtime fan, if you just started watching the show, or if you've been a longtime fan of the show, we hope you've enjoyed this podcast, and I think that's all.
Yeah, that should be it.
Yeah, so join us in 2 weeks for episode 2.
All right.
This has been Back in Style.
See ya.